In our anxiety, we can flip the script. And that's why gaining language about how we navigate disagreement is really important. Because disagreement does not mean unhealth. I would say disagreement and connection is a sign of health. But if we're just in a shouting match of do what I want or you're toxic, then we're in the anxious blaming reactive system. But that's how I would relate to the cutoff. Mm-hmm. Right here. Wait. Okay. There and then front.
I wanted just to mention an example of how I handled something and in the moment pivoted to trying to be a peacemaker and at. A little bit to my own surprise, because it was totally out of A, what I had planned that day, and B, what I expected to come from my own emotional intelligence, which I don't think I'm the sharpest tool in the woodshed on that regard. So I was campaigning for a candidate, and I showed up at the voting precinct, and I noticed over across the parking lot was my opponent's campaigner sitting on the back of his SUV with the tailgate up in the perfect spot. He got there before me, so right away I thought, well, I really blew it. And I said, well, is he my enemy or is he somebody that I should try to go across the aisle to and befriend? So I immediately parked my car and went over and shook his hand. And I got to know him and I said, hey, you know, rather than the two of us being across the parking lot from each other all day, how about when somebody parks their car and they're making their way up to the doors of the voting place, how about we take turns, you speak to that person, then I'll grab the next one first, and then after I say what I want to say, then you present what you'd like to say. And he thought that was a good idea. So we did that, and in the process, even though we didn't end up agreeing with each other's platforms anymore at the end of the day, we became friends. Mm-hmm. So his replacement came in at 4 o'clock, and he was really doing a bad job. He was yelling out to the people across the parking lot, hey, are you A, and then he mentioned his party. Are you part of this party? I said, hey, brother, how about I help you out a little bit here. I'd like to be your friend. So I said, this is probably a more productive way of doing it. So he and I ended up being friends. He ended up saying, well, I wish I had your platform. And so I found out that what's on the surface isn't always what's there. But the reason I'm bringing this up is, I guess I was taking the easy way out, just to say, hey, rather than bring up all the issues, I'm just going to make a friend. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, I think that was the most productive way of handling the situation. And I wonder, in the church, If it's just a matter of listening and first and not even trying to drag the person into our conversation, our world, understanding where they're coming from, and making friendship the first basis of conversation.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, so in that the list I mentioned in the last talk, an incarnational model of life. So what you've described is would be expressing that principle, that if we build rich, thick relationships, it changes how we navigate disagreements. And that's right on target. So absolutely, that's a wonderful story. Okay, we have one more question.
In this talk, you mentioned how important the tone at the top in the church is. And then in the previous session, you mentioned a story about someone who was engaging in an affair and that the root cause of that was not lust, but it was unresolved trauma. Mm-hmm. Do you think that all of the sexual abuse and sins coming out about churches across the nation and world is indicative of an emotional health problem amongst pastors and leadership in the church?
Thank you for your question. I don't think all sexual misbehavior is rooted in trauma. So I'll just say that. I don't think we have to have been traumatized to commit grievous sin. That was one example. But I do think sometimes there are factors underneath the worst things that we do to others. Not just sexual sin, but lots of different kinds of sin. There are underlying stories. So that's the point I'm making there. When we think about leadership in the church, and particularly unhealthy ways of leading and exercising power, I do think that's indicative of immaturity and emotional immaturity. And I do think this is a topic of priority for the church. I think we need to move towards a more holistic understanding of what it means to be a leader. This is a priority at Covenant Seminary, not to put a plug in, but this is, we recognize this. And so we believe that what's happening in the classroom in terms of educating in the scriptures and theology, absolutely essential, but also inadequate. We have to do the work with a person to help them be mature to lead others. And so all of these things we're talking about here is part of the conversation at Covenant Seminary, so that we are raising leaders who will inhabit their role in ways that are more healthy than less healthy. No one will inhabit the role of leader perfectly. That's one of the hardest things about being a pastor as I continue to be a leader, is knowing that there's always hurt, there's always hardship in the task of leading others. Okay, so I want to move next to the question that I think Mr. Bryant was inviting us to consider, and that is how do we manage this or prevent this? What kind of person would I have to be to practice these things? What kinds of things would have to be true of me? And what a systems view of things suggests is that when each part is doing its job, the overall system functions in a healthier way. So when each part of the system is doing its job, the overall system functions in a healthier way. Now, what's the system that we're most familiar with that does this every day, constantly? It's doing it right now. The human body, not the family. That is the wrong answer. The human body. So right now, as I'm talking, your brain cells are just all firing, right? And you're thinking about this stuff, and all that activity is happening. All those synapses are going. But your heart isn't saying, oh, man, I wish I was in on that conversation. Your heart's not interested in that conversation. Why? Because it has its job. Its job is to beat, to pump your blood. And it's just doing that, you know, nothing to see here. And the other parts of your body, they're doing their jobs. And when one part of the system stops doing its job, what do we call that? What? A problem. It might be getting sick, you have a little cold. It might be that you have a heart attack and you have to go to the hospital. But when one part of the system doesn't do its job, it does affect the rest of the systems, right? But health is when each person is doing its job. Now, let's even go further back upstream in the human body. This is how a person is formed in the womb. Because all of us come from a sperm and an egg coming together, right? And then those cells diversify. And then there's like a little map in there, right? Again, I'm no biologist, but I think this is true. Those early cells have maps. We call that our DNA, right? And that map is driving that differentiation of all of those cells. And all of these cells multiply and grow, and then they start becoming all the different parts of our bodies and organs. And that's in the map of the human body. And when one of those cells doesn't do its job, we have a systemic breakdown. And that is underneath the concept of differentiation. The job of a differentiated person in a system is to know its job, your responsibility, to know where I begin and where I end, and to be faithful to my role in that system. And so it's borrowed from cellular biology. And when someone or something is not differentiated, then they are analogous to a virus trying to break down the walls of the people around them, violating boundaries or being invaded, not able to resist that invader. So again, Valley View and Third Church. Third Church was a healthier system because of two reasons. One is it had a healthy immune response. They weren't overwhelmed by that anxious moment. And so it didn't just break them down. It didn't invade them and overwhelm them. But they also knew their jobs. They knew their responsibilities. And they were able to then execute. They knew their roles. And when systems are filled with more differentiated people, they're healthier. They tend to have a healthier immune response to foreign instigators, foreign elements. And they also tend to be more on mission, more engaged in the task to which they're called, able to do the things that they're supposed to do. And so what differentiation deals with is the effort to define oneself, to control oneself, to become a more responsible person and permit others to be themselves as well. Differentiation is the ability to remain connected in relationship to significant people in our lives and yet not have our reactions and behavior determined by them. A differentiated person does not say, "You are making me angry." Now, I might want to be angry when I listen to you talk, but I'm responsible if I get angry. And I take responsibility for that. Now, that's not to absolve somebody who's behaving badly, but it's to say someone behaving badly is not responsible for me behaving badly. The more differentiated I am, the more I understand that's my responsibility. And if I don't want to assume that responsibility, that's indicative of my level of differentiation. Which is why when leaders are more differentiated or more mature, it has an effect of lowering the overall anxiety in the system. Because when the leader is saying, I'm going to do my job, I'm not going to react, I'm not going to be overwhelmed, it tends to help others do the very same thing. Like our hearts. If our hearts were saying, I want to get in on that conversation, we would all be needing to be rushed to the hospital right now. If they all wanted to be brain cells. But they don't. And in the same way, that's one of the ways this happens in the context of the church. So well-differentiated, non-anxious leaders are able to be unduly entangled in the emotional processes at work in the system. They're able to maintain meaningful connection to the various individuals in the system and act according to convictions in pursuit of important organizational goals. Which is one of the hardest things about being a leader, because people have a lot of opinions about the choices you make or the choices a session makes. And we if you have to revisit every decision you make until everybody's happy, guess what happens? Nothing. And the group just keeps getting smaller and smaller. So a group that can tolerate some level of loss is going to be healthier as we navigate what are the core organizational goals for this system. And that's one of the jobs of a session, is to help discern that process and to lead the church into that process, all the while knowing not everybody's going to be 100% agree. And elders are those who ought not personalize that anxiety, making space for people to disagree and yet trying to stay connected to them all the while. And we've all been going through that with the pandemic. I'm sure policies related to masks, and not everybody agreed. I don't know a single church where people didn't leave over masking. I don't know if that was true here, but every pastor I've talked to, there were people who left the church over masking because they couldn't stay in the system. Either it was too strict or too lenient, and they couldn't abide by that. But the more differentiated a leadership is, the more they're going to be like, okay, that happens, we can tolerate that. But we're also going to be stewarding and trying to help those people stay connected, even though they may not have agreed with the particular issue that we accepted. One of the things that's going to happen as y'all go through this, I'm going to go to Madeline, Brian. Y'all are about to start this building project. Boy, that ramps up the anxiety, because you're going to have opinions about what you ought to do with that pretty building that I haven't seen yet. I have a lot of opinions. I had like 20 architects in our church when we renovated an old YMCA. It was a $8 million project. I mean, whew, a lot of triangulation. Because all those architects are like little nodes for, if I was in charge, we would do it this way. And so we had skylights everywhere. It's like, well, we don't have unlimited funds. But it was all this anxiety, all this triangulation. And the leaders are like, okay, how are we going to manage this? How are we going to stay on task, stay focused, keep moving the ship forward? Got very conflictual at times. But that's the job, that's the role of a differentiated leader. And so that's the role of being differentiated, but how do we be differentiated? And I don't think there's a way to be differentiated without taking us back to the gospel and our identity in Christ. The only way for me to move in this direction that I'm describing here is to know who I am as a Christian in Christ, and then move towards others. This quotation from Philippians 2, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any fellowship with the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and purpose. Don't act out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourselves. And then this great exhortation of being like Jesus. I mean, ultimately, that's what we're all called to. But our capacity to act in that way is rooted in our union with Christ and who we are in him. Then we can move in that direction. And that's why I always say that all of our decisions have to be out of the motivation of love and obedience to Christ. Every decision by a session has to be in obedience to Christ and love for our neighbor and God. Every single one. Even the ones that you disagree with. Because there will be decisions that we disagree about, but the motivation is coming out of our union with Christ and our obligation to love him and love our neighbor. And the resources for differentiation grow out of that relationship with him, and then they have to do with that story work that I was talking about in emotional intelligence. And that's why this conversation about differentiation and emotional maturity intersect in my mind. We have to be working on both sides of them. Emotional maturity is more about, okay, what are the things I need to do as a person to be healthy? Differentiation is considering that level of health in relationship to others, particularly in a system, whether it's a family or a church. So that's my identity in Christ. And then, as I grow and mature, I can then begin to deepen dialogue. And we've already begun to name some of this stuff. Listening more, asking questions, willing to change or adjust perspective, suspending judgment long enough to consider other points of view. Do not withhold meaning, but in a healthy way, advocate for your point of view. Recognize the losses and gains associated with the decision, especially when my view is not accepted. Recognize the roles and authority of those in the conversation. Some people have more authority than I do. I'm not going to be the one who makes decisions. They are. So we need to think through the conversation about how do we go about dialoguing. And again, most of us tend to be outcome-based. Like, what's the result? And what I'm inviting Trinity Church into is a much more process orientation. Like, how are you going about these things? And making room for the fact that your outcomes are not always going to be what you want. But you can continue to move forward in greater health as we become more process-oriented as opposed to outcome-oriented. I think I need to stop and just create some opportunity for questions because we're running out of time. So what are some questions? Yes, over here.
You were speaking on just the importance of leadership, having to navigate people's anxiety, people's stories, people's mm-hmm. concerns and conflicts. What are some ways, just the symbiotic relationship between the people in a system, what are some ways that we can feed into and support that positive? That's a hard thing for leaders to do. I understand that. To walk through that with grace and with, you know, being kind. So what are some ways that we can provide support for that?
So one of the most important ones is resisting triangulation. So I think one of the greatest tendencies in our churches is that we do the, like, did you hear what so-and-so or what happened to so-and-so? And when we say to that person who's sharing us that story, I think you need to go back and talk to that person, as opposed to drawing close and falling into the trap of thinking you're helping them. Now there are exceptions to that rule when abuse has occurred or when some crime has been committed. In those situations, call the police. So I want to be careful about how I qualify that. But I think triangulation is one of the primary ways we undermine people that we want to support because we don't want to be in that space of anxiety. And so, like, what do I do? This person's sharing this with me. It's hard for me to disappoint them and tell them to go talk to the person they're upset with. So I'm just going to, you know, take their side. So that's one of the ways we do that. I think another way is making sure when we do have opportunity to speak, that we share our points of view. We're speaking up. And that there's not an echo chamber, that we only are listened to one side of an issue. That's one of the hard things, and typically it happens in churches and organizations, nonprofits, and we only are listening to the voices that agree with us. And so it's important when we're hearing other voices. And let me go back to that. Let's see here. Asking questions. You know, do the leaders want people to ask questions? So how you communicate controversial issues is a very important role of a leadership team. And what I found is there needs to be multiple pathways for communicating, especially controversial issues. So there's the bulletin, there's the website, there's email, there's community groups, elders visiting community groups, there's specific individuals. And what should a session do? All of the above. So those are just some of the things. Yeah, there's a question here.
So what's the difference between triangulation and going to someone to make sure you have, like, to help you with your perspective on a conflict that might be happening? Like, maybe you have a question about something, but you just don't know if you're seeing the situation correctly?
Yeah, so gathering counsel, that's trickier. And a lot of that has to do with the maturity of the person you're talking to and how they will interact with that. And I would say that's very hard for people to do, just generally, because it requires a lot of maturity for a person to say, I'm going to offer you counsel, but I'm not going to take a side. And in churches and in nonprofits, we often inhabit those kind of relationships, dual relationships. So the situation in Ukraine, I have close friends in Ukraine who I'm talking to about things they need. I have people here in the States who are wrestling with what they should do about Ukraine, and they don't all agree. But I find myself talking to both of those groups. So how do I inhabit those relationships? And so what's important for me is to not necessarily take a side, but to try to navigate the different sides of the conversation so that whatever outcomes people choose, they stay connected. But when somebody feels like they've been deeply wrong, I know how it is. Somebody say, I can't believe they did that to me. that was terrible. You know, it's ruined my life. And when somebody's sharing that with you, you want to say, yeah, that's so bad. So it's really hard. So that's what I would say. And sometimes this is why we see a professional counselor. But even professional counselors become part of the systems that, of the people that they're working with. And it's very, these are very difficult things we're talking about.